and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We're going to talk a little about lentils on today's show and also tackle any agronomy questions you may have. If you'd like to start a discussion on an agronomic topic, our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can also email us radio@agphd.com or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. All right, got my brother Brian out on the road today. Brian, what's up today? What are you learning?
I don't know how much I'm learning, but I have been doing some meetings with farmers, just talking about this past year and going into this coming year. And probably the biggest thing that I've been doing this winter is being a cheerleader. A lot of people are down. I'm up in North Dakota, and there's a lot of crop left out in the field. People are thinking, oh, it's going to be prevent plant, everything else. And I'm just saying, hey, let's look at all the positive things. We got all these, as a country, the United States got all these trade deals worked out. We have lower seed prices. We have lower fertilizer prices. We have lower chemical prices. We have a lot of optimism, actually, going into this coming year in terms of, hey, if we plant these acres, we can raise a pretty darn good crop here. So there are so many new things, too, in terms of technology, just planter technology, seed technology, fertilizer technology. I'm just super excited about this coming year, and it's just trying to get people pumped up that, hey, we can have a great year. We just got to get our minds right, because if we're busy wasting time focused on all the bad things that we think might happen, then we're going to miss out on all the good things that will happen if we just make the right decisions on the farm. That's probably the biggest thing.
Well, I think it's easy to get caught up in what's going wrong and complaining about 2019 or even how field conditions are right now for some parts of the country and lose focus on, hey, we need to be planning here on what else can I do on my farm to make more money? What can I do to cut my costs? I was just talking with a couple of farm operations this morning about these rebate programs that are out there, Brian. One operation said it was $110,000 that they were going to get in rebates, and that was a decent-sized operation, but not a huge one. And they said, we just couldn't believe it. When you start stacking products up, if you chose correctly, and they said just from figuring one time, it was $90,000, and then they tweaked the program a little bit, and it was $110,000. They're like, that's real money. That's $20,000 less dollars on inputs just by running the pencil a little better.
Yeah, when you look at fungicides, that's the big example I've been telling a lot of people, because that's usually the last decision to be made is, am I going to spray a fungicide or not? And it's the one where if you're a little short on cash or you're thinking, oh, I want to cut this year, that's one that gets cut out easily. And I just told people this morning, BASF cut their fungicide prices about 20% across the board. And then you look at Bayer, they cut fungicide prices a little bit, but then they added this rebate program. And I was just giving the example of, I was figuring it out, I think it was yesterday, Stratego yield at a full rate for our farm, if it's our fifth Bayer product, that's going to cost us $4 an acre. $4 an acre for a full rate of Stratego yield, one of the best fungicides out there. And I'm going, wait a second here. We've been spraying one time in corn. We've been spraying two times in beans. Why would I not spray an additional time? I know I can gain more than a half a bushel of beans, and I know I can gain more than one bushel on corn. Well, in the past, I looked at it, and I go, yeah, $15 for the fungicide. I just don't know. But at this price, you have to rethink things. And I'm not saying everybody needs to do exactly what I'm going to do, but I am saying we all need to throw out our program from last year. And instead of just saying, well, I've always done it this way, no, that's not good enough. Let's look at what our current costs are for things, everything from fertility to insecticide, herbicide, and fungicide, which is my example.
Yeah, there are so many things that I know we've got a number of farmers out there that have contacted our show with emails and calls saying, man, I gotta cut costs going into this next year. And I think they're gonna miss some of these things. Like you mentioned the fungicides, Brian, how, wow, it isn't gonna take much of a yield increase to make a good return on investment. And the fastest way to make more money is invest your money wisely. And you may be putting a few more dollars into crop inputs this year if you see, wow, I've got this great opportunity to really make money out here, rather than saying, I better trim a dollar or two out of my seed treatment. You're giving up way more than that in yield.
Yeah, but with chemical seed and fertilizer prices down, that allows you to do some more things for the same money as you would have spent this last year. So, yeah, I mean, overall, I'm super, super excited. I'd say the other big discussion is, as we come north in the United States and going into Canada, is all these issues where, oh, I've got to have something for green snap. I got to have a seed variety for IDC. I got to have a seed variety for white mold. And I come back to, let's fix the base problem. What's the base problem here? Well, a lot of it is drainage. So I was talking this morning a little about, let's get some tile in the ground. And then the next thing is, let's look at your potassium levels. Don't listen to these people that tell you that you don't need to look at base saturation. Oh, parts per million is enough. No, it's not. They're dead wrong. And I'm so sick of hearing that from some of these people who call themselves experts, whether they're university people or soils labs people. That's wrong. It's just flat out wrong. It's lying to people, and they're not getting what they need on their farms. You've got to get your base saturation K above 4%. I'm telling you right now, I don't care what your crop is. And if you want big time yields, get it above 6. Go ask any of the high yield guys anywhere. They're all going to talk to you about the same thing with potassium. Yes, you need to look at parts per million, but you also have to look at base saturation. Because if you don't, what's going to happen is you're not going to get enough K into that plant when you need it.
You know, the great thing about that, Brian, is you don't make one penny off this advice that you're giving to others. And I know so many times people are like, ah, somebody's just trying to sell something. Nope. This is something we're actually doing at our farm. It's making us money. We're telling you about it. And it, I don't know, sometimes it's really tough for people to make change, especially on the farm. It's like, ooh, I don't know, I'm risking my income here. Yeah, you are risking your income. You could make a lot more. And we'd really love that for you. We're going to talk about lentils today, and a lot of the fertility advice that you were just talking about there, Brian, really applies to lentils as well. We'll get into some other production tips coming up right after this. Stay tuned.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
We started utilizing the Duo React system this year. You can adjust your speed and it automatically adjusts your sprayer tips. So you can slow down and you aren't building up huge droplets, or you can speed up and you're not throwing a mist that's drifting.
Hypro, helping you spray better.
How much yield did you lose the moment you planted your seed? Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer tired of seeing yield loss from poor stands, the Germinator gives your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an agri-risk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free Grain Bridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at grainphd.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Talking about lentils on today's Ag PhD Radio, and we're taking your calls and agronomic questions too. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's head up to North Dakota, and I don't know what it is, but we head to North Dakota for almost every crop. It's crazy. There's a lot of different crops grown in North Dakota. We got Sam with us right now, and Sam, you know, when we talk about lentils, this is just another example of how North Dakota farmers can raise quite a few different things.
Oh, definitely. I agree with you there.
So what got you into lentils? How'd you get started with this?
Well, my dad started raising them back in the late 90s, and he started with dry peas first, and as the pulse industry kept growing, lentils and chickpeas were introduced into the Northwest region, and the lentil market seemed to take off and have a better return, and that's what drove us initially to start growing lentils.
Yeah, I love that there's different choices out there. And you know, one of the questions that we get oftentimes is, well, where do you fit it into your rotation? So how many years do you go in between lentils to make them successful for you, and what do you like to plant them after?
I like to plant lentils after a wheat crop, and I'm in a three-year rotation. So I'll do lentils followed by canola, followed by wheat, and then back to a pulse crop like lentils. And that seems to break up the soil structure, any diseases on each crop, and each crop does really good behind each one of those. So that's kind of where I'm settling in on a rotation.
You mentioned the disease issue, and I know we talk to farmers all the time, say, man, I'm really nervous. There are some tough diseases out there, and I don't know if crop rotation will be enough. Are you using some fungicides too, or has crop rotation been just your whole answer for the problem?
Oh, no, I've been doing fungicides and seed treatments both. Anymore with springs being unpredictable, I just automatically pull the trigger on seed treats. Last year, I seen it pay dividends in lentils because I treated and my dad did not, and you could notice a huge difference in root rot.
Not that you're giving him any grief about that at all, Sam.
He knew he screwed up when he was sitting in the combine this fall and see the yield monitor, and he goes, "Yep, I think we got to do that from now on."
You know, it's kind of like my brother, and I'll say the same thing. And sometimes, believe it or not, he makes the better decision on that, and I'm the one that has to eat a little crow. But, boy, when it's my turn to be on the top end of that, it's pretty fun.
Yes, it is. Yep. Good.
All right. You know, the other thing that we hear a lot about is this last year, we heard a lot of flea beetle issues in the canola. Did you have much issue with flea beetles or other pests like that in lentils?
Flea beetles and lentils usually isn't a problem. It's the one you have to look out for late May, early June is cutworm. Cutworm has been bad in our area in the past. It seems like a little tillage will take care of that in the fall, or the more expensive way is you're going to have to deal it with a fungicide, or not a fungicide, insecticide.
Sure.
So that's been the big bug problem for a pulse crop in our area has been cutworm.
Yeah, the cultural practices really do make a big difference. There's no question about it. You mentioned the tillage, and I know talking to a number of growers, that's been one of the things they say, I've just gone back to doing some tillage to try to deal with some of these things. And they also say that's helped them to some degree with the disease issues as well, at least keeping them in check, getting some of that stuff off the residue and down into the soil. We're talking with Sam up in North Dakota, and as I mentioned before, North Dakota raises a lot of different crops. Lentils would certainly be one of them. Sam, really appreciate you sharing a little about your operation, and hopefully next year you have something else you can say to your dad, hey, look how I did this. It got us some more yield.
Yeah, well, I'm looking for ideas to try, and hopefully one of those will work, and we can start using it on our own place. So
you bet. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Thanks, Sam. Really appreciate having you on.
Yep. Thanks, Darren.
Let's head out to Montana. We've got Chris with us right now. Actually, Chris is the president of the Northern Pulse Growers Association. Chris, thanks for joining us.
having me.
All right, so we're talking with Sam over in North Dakota, and certainly when we start talking about diversity of crops, getting a diverse range of crops to grow in Montana is a big win as well, rather than just raising the cereals. Talk to us a little about lentil production in Montana.
Well, we kind of learned a little from our neighbors to the east there in North Dakota, where they were doing it before we were, and it kind of migrated west. And it did make a big difference as far as rotation goes. We used to do, you know, chem follow and derm mostly where we're at, and then it became derm and derm. And, you know, you do 4 or 5 years of a wheat or any grass really in a row, and it starts to develop problems. So, yeah, lentils were a good thing to get introduced to the system.
Okay, so talk to us about the growing season for lentils. Obviously, you're in Montana, so it's not 80 degrees in the spring for you. When are you putting seed in, and how are you making it successful?
You know, usually where I'm at, which is in the northeast corner, we're shooting for the middle of April, end of April, doing stuff. Some people are trying to be a little earlier, but, you know, it's still a little cold then, of course, but a little seed treat goes a long way. Heard you guys talking about that a little bit. That seems to make a big difference. And, you know, the lentil growing point is below the ground, too, so it can handle a little bit of frost until it gets, you know, relatively mature.
Yeah, the seed treatment, I know we got so many comments on it in 2019. So many guys saying, wow, did that make a difference this year? I don't know. Maybe it won't be as big a deal in 2020. Maybe we'll warm up earlier, but I just like playing the odds. And odds are, and Sam said, are unpredictable springs. And I was going to jump him and say, look, it's pretty predictable where you guys farm. It's going to be cold.
Yep, that's right. You know, and I think, like, we're seeding earlier than we maybe should be into that cool seed bed. That seed just sits there. So, you know, it's more money to lay out, but, you know, if it pays you 1 year out of five, that's probably worth the 4 years it didn't necessarily work.
You know, Sam had mentioned cutworms, too. And I was just wondering, do you see as much of a cutworm issue where you're at?
You know, we do. We're similar to him, probably. We're mostly no-till. Most operations around here are, so that seems to be more conducive for cutworms there. And, you know, there may be a bigger problem in peas than they are lentils, but they're definitely something you got to watch out for. Yeah.
How about with fertility? I know when we talk about cereal production, nitrogen is such a big input. How about with lentils? Is there something that's really ringing the bell for growers in Montana?
Well, you have to inoculate with a rhizobia. I forget, you know, the strain is different between, like, chickpeas and soybeans and lentils, and I forget which particular one it is, but lentils fix their own end generally, and they're actually pretty sensitive to nitrogen, especially if you have high residual N in the soil. If you have too much N, you can end up with a whole lot of vegetative growth and not very much reproductive growth, so you got a whole lot of plant, but not much to show for it.
Sure, sure. So P and K are a bigger deal for you, or what are you fertilizing with on the lentils?
Like, we usually just run 1152, like 20 pounds of it down with the seed. There's some guys do a little more, some guys don't do any. It doesn't, the P and K doesn't seem to be the big deal. The biggest thing is making sure you inoculate it when you're seeding the stuff. That can lead to some wrecks if you don't.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I agree with you. Any crop that can produce its own nitrogen, for what inoculants cost, it's such a cheap input. The return on investment is generally pretty good, even if it only adds just a little bit to it. And then in terms of a market, what's the market like for lentils in Montana?
You know, it's been a little soft the last couple of years, like most everything has, really. But it's been fairly steady, even though it's, you know, lower than we'd all like, but I guess that's the way it works.
Yeah, it ebbs and flows, no doubt about that. We're talking with Chris in Montana. Chris, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on today, and good luck going into 2020.
Great. Thanks. You as well.
Talking about lentils on today's program, but also taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
Build with the best. When you choose Morton Buildings for your next farm storage building, you'll experience the Morton advantage at every step, starting before the walls even go up. Since the value of our buildings is in its ability to protect what you have stored inside, we ensure that every component is researched and tested to withstand the elements in all weather conditions. And we back it up with the strongest warranty in the business. Looks better, built stronger, lasts longer. Learn more at MortonBuildings.com.
A pasture should have two things, grass and cattle. No weeds, no brush. That's why Chaparral Herbicide offers the broadest spectrum weed control available. It controls weeds other products can miss, like buckbrush and Canada thistle. And less weeds and brush in your pastures means more forage, so you spend less on feed. Chaparral also suppresses seed heads, lessening the effects of fescue toxicosis, all while providing season-long residual control. Visit NoWeedsNoBrush.com today and learn more about Chaparral.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy Two Save Three are trademarks owned by AMVAC Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
How do you know when to run your grain bin fans? There's an app for that. With the Steps GMS app, you can manually turn your fans on and off from your smartphone. You can also configure the Steps GMS app to automatically turn fans on when the humidity or temperature is ideal to keep your grain in top quality condition. Save yourself some time and take the guesswork out of managing your stored grain with the Steps GMS app. Contact us at stepsgms.com for more information.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio today. We're talking about not corn today, not soybeans today, not wheat. We're talking about lentils. We get a lot of questions about different crops. And what's interesting is there's so many management things from one crop that do translate pretty well to others. We've been talking a little bit about seed treatment today. I know Sam in North Dakota had mentioned how important seed treatment was on lentils for him this year. Chris in Montana was talking about inoculant. He said, oh man, inoculant is an absolute must for lentils. And I think that's great advice. They're both things that don't take a huge investment, but the return on investment has been really good. And those same things hold true with other crops too. I know on our farm, I would say this, on our corn and soybeans that we raised last year, boy, it made a huge difference that we had a seed treatment on. It made a huge difference in our beans to put the inoculant on last year. And I'm glad to hear those types of things. Lots of things going on in lentils, very important crop, and a lot of things that it responds, lentils respond very well to. Real happy to have Todd with us now. He farms in Idaho and is also part of the U.S. Dry Peas and Lentils Council. Todd, thank you for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, good morning, my time anyway.
Yeah, I guess it depends on where you're at in the world when you're chatting.
Yeah.
You know, as we're talking about lentils, we get a lot of questions about where do the lentils go? What is demand doing for that? And how are all these trade deals impacting lentils as well? You know, there's a lot of stuff out there. We got to raise good yields. That's great and important for profitability, but we need a good market too.
Right, right. And so, you know, the primary markets for lentils, you know, the most lucrative market is Europe, of course, because they're willing to pay for high-quality lentils. And they consume a lot of lentils in Spain and in around the Mediterranean. So that's one of the bigger markets. The even domestically, the markets are growing, and it's still a pretty useful crop as we learn how to fractionate them and use them in as a protein source and as a flour source. So there's a lot of developing markets that are pretty exciting.
Yeah, definitely. The protein market is really exciting, I would say. I agree with you 100%. Now, one comment you made, you said the people in Europe will pay for high-quality lentils. Is the United States raising a high-quality product, and what are some of the things that you're seeing with research that are leading to a higher-quality product?
So, you know, this is one of the efforts that we've made over the last 50 years of marketing lentils is to make sure that our customers understand that the highest quality lentil in the world comes from the United States. And it's true. We have a grading system that keeps the standard consistent year to year. Our farmers are well educated and well understand how to produce quality lentils, and the processors know how to make them take that quality on into the marketplace. So we certainly are the source for quality lentils in the world. And then in terms of research, you know, one of the interesting things in my career here working for the Pea and Lentil Council is the definition of quality. And in our history, the quality of lentil was based mostly on the way it looked. And currently, as I said, you know, with the protein market and the ingredient markets developing, those definitions of quality are different, and in turn, then that comes back to the breeder, so he has to select for different qualities. So one of the exciting things in this time is something we call the Pulse Crop Health Initiative, which is a funding source for pulse crop research funded by the federal government, and we've been able to bring it from 2 years ago, it was $2 million, last year, $3 million. And this year it's $4 million. And part of that research is focused on pulse crops, but lentils are certainly a part of that. So they're looking at ways to increase the micronutrients in lentils to make them a more valuable commodity. We're looking at ways to improve nodulation. I heard you talking about that, nodulation of pulse crops, including lentils. And then other managements like level of protein in pulse crops. You know, in terms of the research project, it's focused on peas, but since they're related crops, we're hoping that we will learn how to improve the nitrogen fixation, the increased protein in the seed, and you know, so it's the Pulse Crop Health Initiative is an exciting, really exciting program that we've been using to improve our research into pulse crops, including lentils.
Oh, that's such a huge benefit for growers. You talked about some things that are really key. I think the micronutrients, and we can focus on the other ones too a little bit, but when you talked about increasing micronutrient levels inside there, think about the benefits for human health. It's awesome.
Right.
And, you know, when I look at our soils, there are a lot of farmers that are struggling in soils to get that micronutrient piece just right. So I know there's a lot of work going into other crops. I'm glad to hear that the pulse crops are getting some effort too. On the micronutrient piece, because boy, you look at if we're already the best quality product in the world, if we could add that piece and say, you know what, we're going to have these levels of micros. Wow, that's a great market for us.
Yeah, and another effort that we've been working on. You know, I've worked for the Pea and Lentil Council for 20 years. One of our primary tools is. And developing a quality lab, a lab where we can evaluate the quality of our pulse crops, including, you know, all of them, peas, lentils, chickpeas, and beans. And effort this year, we were able to add $1 million into the ARS budget to establish a pulse quality lab with ARS. So we currently have a pulse quality scientist that's he's currently located in South Dakota. There's a pulse quality scientist position in North Dakota, NDSU, and so this will add another element similar to what wheat already has across the nation to evaluate the pulse quality of the crop every year so that millers can understand what they're going to deal with in terms of pulse flowers, pulse ingredients, and they can make determinations of how to use that product. So that improves the marketability of the crop, you know, domestically and internationally.
You know, it's fun when there's some funding in there to help promote a crop and then to promote some good quality processes all the way through. We were talking with a couple of growers earlier just about what a big difference some of the cultural practices, whether it's tillage or no-till or just simply crop rotation, and what a difference that could make in production. There's a lot of education. I know there's a number of organizations out there that are working towards this goal of improving pulse crop profitability for farmers and also the acceptance of the product around the world. It's really great hearing this, Todd. That's fantastic. What is this, a one-year thing, the Pulse Crop Health Initiative, that each year you have to go back for the funding, or is it something that we're locking in more long-term?
So it was authorized in the Farm Bill for 5 years, and it was authorized at $25 million a year. And so we're currently at $4 million. We, of course, want $25 million, and we're working toward that. We meet with Congress every year asking them to authorize or appropriate up to the authorized level. So we've been successful for the last 3 years at increasing that. We're going after a significant increase over this next year. We have some nutrition issues we're trying to help out with, and so we have a good story to tell. Pulse crops are, as you said, they're a nutritious crop. They're going to help out. We think they have an impact in some of the problems we have in the United States, like obesity, diabetes, heart disease. We think we can make a significant impact if we have some additional nutritional information about those crops. And then we can also help make the crop more nutritious, as you said. If we can increase the nitrogen, the micronutrients in the crop, increase the understanding of what's important, make the ingredients better, combine those ingredients with other foods and improve them, fortify them, there's just a whole lot of potential and possibility there.
That is exciting. We've been talking with Todd Scholes with the U.S. Dry Peas and Lentils Council. Todd, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on today. Thanks for sharing the info, and keep carrying this forward.
Okay. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Good luck over the next year.
You bet. Thank you very much. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
You know, a healthy crop is required for your best results. Simply put, balanced crop nutrition pays. AgriLiquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products to deliver those results. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you with your fertility decisions. AgriLiquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agriliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
Bean growers continue to see yield loss from white mold across the Midwest this season. To maximize next year's crop, a white mold prevention strategy that includes Contan's WG soil fungicide is a must for your farming operation. Applying Contan's this fall to reduce the sclerotia in the soil is the most effective way to stop white mold at its source. Start a Contan's white mold control strategy this fall or pay for it later in lost yield.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer Amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Revitec fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, being able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic insecticides from Atticus LLC. Unwanted insects are a nuisance, but they're no match for Serpent from Atticus. Serpent delivers economical, fast-acting, broad-spectrum control to help your corn, soybeans, and wheat crops thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AtticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today we've been talking about lentils on our show, and one question came up that I wanted to dig into just a little bit more, and that was fertility. I got Brian back on with us now too. When we look at fertility, Brian, and I just pulled up the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app and typed in 60 bushel lentil. And you can say, oh, I'm not raising 60, or maybe you're raising way more than 60. It just gives us a pretty good idea. We need 3 pounds of nitrogen per bushel of lentils. And yes, they can produce their own, but I know a couple of the guys were saying how important inoculation was. It's going to be huge if you need to get 3 pounds of nitrogen for each bushel of lentils. That's going to be big. And then you need almost 3 pounds of potassium for each bushel of lentils. When you look at the grain plus the stover and what you're going to need for the season, that's a pretty heavy demand for both of those nutrients.
Yep, and you look at where a lot of lentils are raised, Pacific Northwest and in the state of North Dakota. And in the state of North Dakota, I'll tell you right now, number one, the average guy doesn't have enough potassium in the soil, and so that will absolutely help in most cases. And if you're questioning that, just send us your soil test. We'll take a look at it for you and tell you whether or not we think more potassium would help your lentil crop. And then number two is nitrogen. And you mentioned, yes, inoculation and all that kind of stuff, but I think about it a lot like I think about soybeans. Okay, very similar crops. If you have a year like 2019 where you had very wet soils, just think about the bacteria that produce nitrogen for the plant, whether we're talking soybeans, lentils, whatever. The point is, a lot of those bacteria, unfortunately, died because of our wet summer, our wet fall. And to think that we're going to go into this coming year with, number one, as much nitrogen carryover as we would normally expect from whatever crop we had, and number two, with the bacteria in the soil to help us produce nitrogen, I think that's, our dad used to say this from time to time, you're living in dreamland. So let's get real here and say, you know what? Could 30 pounds, could 50 pounds, 70 pounds of nitrogen at some point during the growing season help our yield and our profitability? Nitrogen prices are down. It's worth a shot, at least on a few acres. So that's what I'd be thinking about.
I agree, and I would not say planting time. I would not say early. I would say during the season. And one of the points that I believe Chris from Montana had made is just that if you get so much nitrogen, with especially like following a cereals crop, and you've got carryover N potentially if yields weren't great, all of a sudden you get all this N available, you get lots of vegetative growth that doesn't really result in yield. You want to wait until you've already kind of set the table, then add this as you're trying to make seed. That's when you really get the power.
I agree, but let's think about ammonium sulfate, for example. That's kind of like a controlled release nitrogen. There are other products out there, too, that are controlled release products. So if you do that in a cold environment, it's going to be a long time before that nitrogen really comes available for the plant. So those are things you could think about as well.
Okay. The other thing, Brian, I mentioned the potassium. We need a lot of potassium, but phosphate. So we heard from Chris. He said, well, I'm putting some phosphate out with my lentils, and that's important too. You need about 0.8 pounds of phosphate for a bushel of lentils. But here's the challenge. We're in no-till and we're in dry country. I mean, think about farming in Montana. You may or may not get much rain this year. And if you've got to get phosphate in a no-till situation, this is going to be a little bit of a challenge. I don't know. I don't know if many guys are focused on that, of how do I get that down into the root zone where I'm going to have some moisture and have it available for my crop on time.
Yeah, but I don't care if you get 30 inches of rain or you get 3 inches of rain. It doesn't make any difference. If you lay phosphorus on the soil surface, that is not getting into the plant very well this year. You have to get it down into the ground. So if you're in no-till, that means you need to place that phosphorus down deeper. Otherwise, I can promise you, if you go back out there and you're a continuous no-tiller and you just have been broadcasting your phosphorus, I can promise you, if you do soil tests, every 1 inch going down in the soil down to 12 inches, the vast majority of your phosphorus is going to be in the top inch. Well, what good does that do you? I mean, you don't have any roots there, so we got to get that phosphorus down a little deeper. You mentioned earlier in the show, people want to cut dollars. I want to cut dollars too, but you know what I want to do more than that? I want to take the dollars I'm spending and spend them as wisely as possible. And so this is just a good example. I can go broadcast phosphorus, or I can figure out another way to put it on. I'm going to spend the same dollars either way. How do I get the most out of my phosphorus? Well, if I put it down near where the plant roots are going to be, I got a lot better shot. And also, I think where you might have been going with this is, okay, the top inch or two is drying out. We've got moisture down at 6 inches deep, and especially down at 12 inches deep. Are we placing the phosphorus down there? If we are, now we made our crop a lot more drought tolerant. That's a super big deal in Montana, for example.
Yeah, it sure is. Well, you know, a lot of things when we look at lentils, and they do really, but there's so many of these management things that we talked about that do hold true for other crops. I know we've gotten some feedback from listeners that were really curious about some of these things going on in lentils, like the inoculant. Man, that inoculant really is a big deal. Maybe I should reconsider it. We got those kind of comments, but also getting some questions in. Are you ready to jump into the Ag PhD mailbag,
well,
Brian?
Yeah, but hold up. I mean, when we talk about lentils, it's very similar to our talk with corn and soybeans, like we're talking every day on the show. You got to, number one, look at drainage. If you don't have good drainage, you're going to have a major problem, especially when a lentil plant has a small root system. Number two, you got to have adequate fertility. So you mentioned nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium. I want people to think also about sulfur. Sulfur is huge, and we see dramatic deficiencies. Micronutrients, very, very important. Then you got to look at, okay, what's the best weed control program? How about insects? How about fungicides? And then should I be trying some natural products? How about some plant growth hormones? There are a lot of things that can be done. You can absolutely increase your production and increase your profitability. It's going to be more work. You're going to have to pay attention. You're going to have to study up. You're going to have to try some things. But, I look at the prospect for corn and soybeans in the future, and I'm super excited. I can say the same thing about lentils.
Yeah, and I think here's the other thing that came up, and we were talking with Todd Scholes on the U.S. Dry Peas and Lentils Council. The Farm Bill authorized spending up to $25 million a year on research for pulse crops. They're only funding it less than, 20%. So they're not really putting the money into this. So it's not like you're going to have this huge wealth of research data to go on. In some cases, if you're raising these crops, you need to do a little bit of experimentation on your own farm. You know, is sulfur going to pay big for you? Get some sulfur out there and find out. Do some plant tissue analysis. See what kind of levels you're getting in your plants, these types of things. And if you notice differences out in your field and you notice differences in yield, hey, you've discovered some things that are going to help you going forward. And I love that there are organizations in the pulse crop world, because growers need to unite together to try and share this information so everybody can move forward.
As soon as you mentioned the government, I'm like, how much are you going to learn from the government ever about farming? I look at guys that are raising super high yields in corn or beans or any crop. Where are they getting most of their information? They're getting it from other great growers. They're getting it from the top agronomists in the world and the top soils people in the world. And then they're getting it from themselves. In other words, they're trying lots of things. They're really studying it. They're walking out in their fields, taking plant tissue analysis constantly, doing lots of soil tests, and they're getting their own stuff. So if you ever think the government's going to get you rich, you're never going to make money.
Yep, I totally agree. And, you know, when we talk about lentils, many things came up today. One of the things is the market that, hey, we are raising a good quality product. And it's so important when we look at a crop like lentils that we focus on that and try to have something decent that's going to go into the food market. We talked about the protein and that they're working on improving protein. We're definitely working on that in many of the crops that we're raising, trying to improve our protein levels. But I love the focus on micronutrients, and that's going to be a huge one when it comes to human health, but it's also a huge one for your soil and for your plants. If we aren't feeding those plants with the micros they need, we're going to be short in the end. And we're seeing that far too often as we look at soil tests, tissue tests. We don't get as many grain quality tests here as we do soil and plant tissue tests, but it's something that we're running short on, and we need to make sure we're focused on feeding all those micros. Brian kind of called me out on that too. Hey, you're focusing too much on NP and K. We need to talk about the other things. Don't forget about the micronutrients with lentils and with the other crops you're growing. We're going to dive into the Ag PhD mailbag coming up right after this. Stay tuned.
Now that harvest is in the books, it's time to start thinking about your plan for the next crop. Using a pre-emerge herbicide in your soybeans is the best agronomic choice you can make to ensure control of tough weeds and grasses before they wreck the rest of your season. Authority brand herbicides from FMC keep your soybean fields clean from the start. Research trials have shown that applying a pre-emerge herbicide at planting can preserve up to 20 bushels or more of yield potential. With multiple options to fit your soil types, tillage practices, and weed management needs, Authority brand herbicides deliver the pre-emerge power to fight glyphosate-resistant weeds before they take root. How do they do it? Two modes of action keep resistance in check. Rule your fields with dual modes of action. It's not too late. Visit your FMC retailer or FMCAgUS.com to learn more. Always read and follow label directions, restrictions, and precautions for use.
If you're a rancher who's obsessed with keeping your pastures clear, turn to Grazon Next Herbicide. It offers superior broadleaf weed control, so instead of thinking about weeds, you can think about the money you'll save growing more grass and buying less feed. Used early in the season, Grazon Next also provides residual activity that controls newly emerged weed seedlings, giving you season-long control. Start enhancing your land while you protect it. Visit leavetheweedstous.com to learn more about Grazon Next. Always read and follow label directions.
White mold, sudden death syndrome, root rot. If you raise soybeans, it may seem like you have all the cards stacked against you when it comes to disease. But did you know there is a new cost-effective seed treatment which can help prevent all three? Heads Up Seed Treatment offers a new proactive approach for dealing with fungal and bacterial diseases. Compatible with other seed treatments, hedge your bet against disease this spring. Ask your dealer for Heads Up today. To locate a dealer, visit headsupst.com.
We know balanced crop nutrition pays. AgriLiquid has the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop, plus the expertise to give you a recommendation based on your soils, your fields, and your goals. AgriLiquid has the phosphorus, potassium, and micronutrient products necessary to deliver the best results from a solid fertility program. Visit agriliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
As your corn crop grows and the ear begins to form, potassium is at a high demand, almost as high as nitrogen. The same is true for soybeans, with similar high demands of potassium during pod fill. Don't fall behind. Ensure your crop is getting its potassium with Catalyst. Catalyst by Actagro has been shown to be the best at entering the leaf when compared to other leading potassium products. Visit k-supercharged.com for more information.
Come on in. The Ag PhD mailbag is about to begin.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. It is time for the Ag PhD mailbag. We're taking your calls and your emails right now. 844-44-AG-PHD if you want to call in. Otherwise, radio@agphd.com is our inbox. All right. First question here. This one is coming from Daniel down in Missouri. Daniel's got a couple of comments and questions about Extend. I think Brian is joining us here as well. Brian, taking the first question, this one is from Daniel down in Missouri. He said, considering planting Extend soybeans, but I haven't been using dicamba because I've been nervous about the drift. We're in a no-till situation, so I'm considering using it in burn down. I've heard you guys talk about it may not work as well when it's cool. Can you talk to me more about how to make dicamba work in cooler weather and possibly what herbicides you might use in with the dicamba to make it work better in a burn down?
Well, first of all, it doesn't work. There are very few herbicides that work well in terms of foliar herbicides when the weather's cold. I don't care if we're talking Roundup, we're talking Gramoxone, AIM, any of the burn down products. So 2,4-D, dicamba, it's all the same. We've got to have active growth out there. And that's one of the things, like for me as a young agronomist, I didn't really understand either. I'm like, well, if the weather's bad and the plant can barely grow, that should be better for killing the weed, right? Not worse. Nope, just doesn't work that way. So we've got to have a plant that's growing well. In terms of how you make it work better, well, my first advice is, if you can, wait for the weather to warm up. Then you don't have to do anything extra, don't have to spend any more money. Otherwise, we want to increase the rate with products we can increase the rate on. So with glyphosate, for example, there's nothing holding you back. It's perfectly legal and labeled and everything else, you can bump your normal rate in most cases for a burn down. But with dicamba, you can't. If you're already using a pint, you can't go any higher than that when you're doing a burn down in front of corn or in front of soybeans. So you've got to be a little bit careful about that. So what would I do if I'm going to go out there and use dicamba? How do I make it work a little better? Number one, I'm going to put crop oil with it. Number two, I'm going to put some other herbicides with it. So for me, that would be either Valor or Authority, plus Metribuzin. And by the way, I was talking to a farmer this morning who said, yeah, my agronomist said I shouldn't use Metribuzin because I have high pH. And I said, well, that agronomist is wrong. You should use Metribuzin. You just have to cut the rate. You're lucky because now you can use a lower rate, save yourself money, and you're going to get the same performance I am out of Metribuzin in my higher rate, and I spent more money in my low pH ground. But anyway, that's beside the point. I guess the whole thing is you got to have something else in there that's going to heat up that dicamba. And like I say, that'd be crop oil or methylated seed oil. That would be a PPO like Valor Authority, and it would be some Metribuzin. And now you really got something. Can you throw Roundup in with it as well? Sure can, but keep in mind dicamba antagonizes glyphosate. So, in other words, if you threw in 20 ounces of glyphosate, it's like you have 10 ounces actually in the tank. So just kind of keep that in mind for the performance you can expect out of your glyphosate.
Yeah, it is a different deal when you're spraying when the conditions are not perfect. The other thing to take a look at is again, the weather, not just when you're spraying, but ahead of when you're spraying and after it. So look at the few days leading up to that. If it's been cold, it takes those plants a few days to get growing again. You want actively growing weeds to do a nice job. Hey, thanks for the question.
Yeah, and you use the word perfect. I wouldn't use the word perfect. I would just say warm. So we need that temperature. We would like that temperature above 70 for things to work great. But yeah, you bring up a good point. We got to look at the nighttime temps. We got to look at the temps before and after spraying if you want the very best performance out of it. But don't get too worried about it. I mean, dicamba still works pretty well. We've only had one disaster on our farm where we went out with a pint and it was literally like we did not spray. We were spraying and it was 50, 55 degrees, and that was dumb, but that's how you learn, and that's why we're talking about this, so you don't make the same mistakes we have.
Thanks for the question, Daniel. Really appreciate that. Got one from Arkansas from Steve. He said, I've been listening to you guys the last couple weeks talk about all these great rebate programs. Well, I finally went into my chem dealer, and he told me about some of the same programs you guys were mentioning, but he also mentioned some finance offers that are running through John Deere Financing. Now, yep. She says there's no catch, but who pays the fees that John Deere Finance is charging? I'm wondering if you have these same programs up where you farm, and if you plan to use them, or if you think they're good.
Yep, we are. So the big companies are paying the fees. FMC, BSF, Bayer. I mean, there are several companies that have those programs. And yeah, it's a good deal.
Well, they don't really have any cash. They don't have any cash discounts that you're giving up. So it's just here's the price, and you know what? We'll eat the finance charge too.
Right, because they want more sales, and they figure, well, if financing is not an option, then we get the sale. But what I keep talking to those companies about is I go, well, what if I don't need financing? Can you just give me a discount on the stuff? Nope, they aren't willing to do that. So it makes me very unhappy because I don't want to have to borrow money from them. I don't need to borrow some money from them. But if they're going to give me 0% financing, why would I not take it?
Nope, I agree. Yeah. So, Steve, I think those programs are good. If you need those products and want to work with those companies and take their 0% finance offer, if you can do it cheap that way, that's great. More times than not, we like working with local banks. But like you say, if there's no charge at all to do so, you just will do that on part of what you're financing for inputs. Thanks for the question. Really appreciate that. I got one from Tony out in Colorado. He said, I use some different microbials with my in-furrow program on several different crops. And I heard you talking about chlorine the other day and how that may kill the microbes before they work for me in the soil. It got me concerned that we should be testing our water. And then I realized, oh, we're using a city water source. Of course that must have chlorine. How much is it to treat for chlorine? And what actually happens with the chlorine once I put the treatment in? Well, that's a great question, Tony. It's a few different things here. First of all, glad to hear you're using some microbials in the in-furrow programs. We are too. We've really found some things that work. We should probably compare notes with you on which products you're using, what ones you've had good luck with. The chlorine is a big deal. It definitely can hurt some microbials because, honestly, that's why these city water sources, rural water sources are putting the chlorine in there. They're trying to kill microbes. I don't know what the exact level is. I would assume there's probably a standard level in a lot of these places. But, if you've got chlorine in the water, you do need to treat it. We found for our own operation, we're using some rural water here where we've got some chlorine, and it's only a few cents an acre. It's not a huge expense to us, but it is something that's really adding some value. The last question you had, though, where does the chlorine go? It doesn't go anywhere. And this is one of the things I thought at first when we started talking about this, why we need to treat for chlorine, that, I guess we're going to have to leave water tanks open and let it gas off or something like that. It doesn't really gas off. What happens is that chlorine gets converted into a chloride, which isn't harmful for our plants. So we can actually just spray it out. It doesn't make any, like, chunks or anything like that in our sprayer. It just flows right out through our spray nozzles. Haven't had an issue. So I would look at using something like that. We use a product called BioPrep is what we have been putting in on our farm, but I'm sure there's probably some other solutions out there as well to take care of that chlorine and improve your microbial survival rates. Great question, Tony. Really appreciate that. And if you want to give us any feedback on things that are working for you or products that you find in your area, we'd be happy to hear about that too. Last one, we got time for just one more question. We got about one more minute yet. This one comes from Jared. He's in North Dakota. He said, hey, I heard you talking about inoculants on lentils, and you made a comment about soybeans. I'm wondering, are you still using inoculants on soybeans? Do you think that's something we should consider going into this year? We were awfully wet in the fall of 2019. Yeah, Jared.
I mean, inoculants pay. If you're a soybean farmer and not using an inoculant, I think you're crazy. They're so cheap. Just look for a good one with a high-rise OB account and treat the beans and then get out and get them planted.
I think the other part of that too, Jared, is I think, you know, like I can't remember which guy it was, but it was Sam that was saying that some years things pay more than others. And I would say that's probably going to be the case for you on the inoculant too. Looking at 2020 with the wet conditions you had in your state of North Dakota over the last year, really since September, it's been super, super wet for a lot of guys. That means there's less oxygen in that soil profile, and that means it's going to be a little harder for microbial survival. So I think adding the right microbes out there could pay even bigger benefits in 2020. Thanks for listening to our show today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.